SNI Digital Innovations in Learning, in association with the Medical News Network, are pleased to present another in the SNI Digital Investigative Series on Achieving Healthful Longevity. In a talk given by Russell Blaylock on the new cause of Parkinson's disease, Alzheimer's, dementia, and ALS, what you need to know. Russell Blaylock is the head of theoretical neuroscience research and the associate editor-in-chief of the neuroinflammation section of Surgical Neurology International. He's also a certified clinical nutritionist. He's the creator and editor of the Blaylock Wellness Report and the author of multiple books, scientific papers, and a health commentator on radio, TV, and the Epic Times. These are some of the books that Dr. Blaylock has published. They're available on Amazon.com. Natural Solutions for Liver Problems, A Liver Cure is the title. Natural Strategies for Cancerous Patients, Dr. Blaylock's Prescriptions for Natural Health, and a subject of this talk, a book on excitotoxins, and also a book with Dr. Ausman on the China virus, What is the Truth? He's published numerous papers in multiple journals, and notably in SNI, he's published papers that are leading publications on COVID, COVID Update, What's the Truth?, The Dangers of COVID-19 Injections, and other papers on degenerative disease and Parkinson's disease, papers on viruses in the tumor microcell environment, and associated cancer aggressiveness by virus oncomodulation. Key to this talk are a series of papers that we will repeat at the end with the references, so you can prepare to take screenshots of them for references. On one, the biochemical basis of neurodegenerative disease, the role of immunoexcitotoxicity and ways to attenuate it. The reference is given at the bottom. Parkinson's disease, microglial macrophage-induced immunoexcitotoxicity as a central mechanism of neurodegeneration, again with the references in Scientific Surgical Neurology International, additive aluminum as a cause of induced immunoexcitotoxicity resulting in neurodevelopmental and neurodegenerative disorders. And immunoexcitotoxicity as a central mechanism of the etiopathology and treatment of autism spectrum disorders. So these major papers, which are available in Surgical Neurology International, which you'll be able to screenshot at the end and look up, contain all the references for the subject matter that he's going to present. Obviously, looks like it's being tied together with a knowledge of immunoexcitotoxicity. Dr. Blaylock also has a monthly nutritional newsletter, which he's published for 20 years. If you're interested, you can subscribe to the Wellness Report at newsmax.com. Russell, let me show you this video that just came from about a day ago after the presidential debate.
Able to right wipe out his debt, we'd be able to help make sure that all those things we need to do, child care, elder care, making sure that we continue to strengthen our healthcare system, making sure that we're able to make every single solitary person eligible for what I've been able to do with dealing with everything we have to do with, if we finally beat Medicare.
Thank you, President Biden. President Trump
was right. He did beat Medicare. He beat it to debt
it's an example of the president, and we've seen him over now since he really took office. He had signs and symptoms of it. We talked about that. And has now progressed to this point where you saw the stiff-like faces, fumbling, couldn't remember things. Obviously, he has a problem with cognitive issues, problem remembering, and he walks. You see that he's stiff and he falls. These are, talk to a neurologist friend that you know of mine who says that he has a form of dementia, Alzheimer's dementia. This is Parkinson's, actually, dementia and Lewy body dementia. It's confusing for the audience, but these are forms of dementia that are serious and progressive. And it leads into something that you've talked about for many years and you've worked on, which is, what are the cause of these neurodegenerative diseases of the nervous system? Because if I'm the average citizen and I go on the internet and I look, I went on to the various different websites and they say, well, nobody knows what the causes are. There's a small percentage that are genetic. And then they talk about toxic substances. And I think we should start from there, because you've had observations from the time you were a resident on about these diseases, and tell us about what you see and what the differences are, and how does aluminum figure into all this? So I've given you a lot to do there, but you want to, can you tackle this here and looking at what we just saw?
I think so. You know, my father died of Parkinson's, so I know what it looks like. I know what he went through, and it persisted for years before he finally deteriorated to the point where he died. And we see this in other cases. You know, when I was a resident, I spent over 6 months on neurology and ran it by myself, just the attending and me, because all the neurology residents left. And so I got to treat all of this as a neurologist. And what I observed early on is I began to look at these agents, and this was back during the time about 20 years ago. They discovered that all cases seemed to be somehow related to exposure to environmental toxins. They picked out pesticides, herbicides, and fungicides. MNEB was the number one one, along with some of the organochlorines, organophosphates. And so I began to look at these other things. We had metals, we had lead, we had aluminum, we had mercury. And so I said, well, there's got to be a common denominator. They're all doing something. And so I looked up each one of them. Each one of them was a microglial activator. And if you looked in the pathology of this disease, the microglia was the cause of the degeneration, not the chemical itself directly.
Let me just ask, let me interrupt for a second, because we may have some people who are not medically knowledgeable. What is a microglia? Are those some protective cells in the nervous system? Tell us about that.
Well, the microglia is the brain's immune cell.
Okay.
They're located also in the spinal cord, and they're primarily designed as an immune cell. And we have them from birth, and they gradually develop. Like immune cells, they can move around in the brain several centimeters. And we know that most microglia are asleep all the time, what they call resting microglia. But it's not really resting. What it's doing is sending out little extensions, which we call pseudopodia, and they're analyzing the spinal fluid that's floating around brain cell to make sure it doesn't have too high glutamate level. Glutamate's an amino acid, and it's an excitotoxin. And so it's constantly testing it, because if the level's too high, it'll interfere with brain function. You start getting a lot of static. If it gets higher than that, it begins to kill brain cells. And so most of these diseases we call neurodegenerative diseases are because of excess glutamate and overactivity of the microglia. And what happens is when you stimulate this microglia, it becomes active and it changes from this resting state, which it can actually help repair the nervous system. It changes into an active microglia. When it's activated, it switches over to start secreting high levels of glutamate and can destroy things, including connections and nerve cells, brain cells, and spinal cord cells. And so if we look at all these diseases, they all show evidence that the damage was done by excitotoxicity. And that the immune reaction was not severe enough to account for what they were seeing pathologically in all of these neurodegenerative diseases. I wrote an article for your journal called The Biochemical Basis of Immunoexcitotoxicity, which explains it in some detail. But we begin to look, because of this mechanism, as what chemicals would do that and what chemicals would reverse that or stop it. And we know that there are certain natural compounds that turn off the microglia. They go back to resting and they start repairing the nervous system. And we know that other chemicals in our environment actually turn on these microglia and they become destructive elements. And so when they looked in the island of Guam, they were amazed that these people would develop Parkinson's disease, and then they'd go into Alzheimer's disease. And one of the first diseases they developed was ALS, myotrophic lateral sclerosis, which is a destruction of the motor nerve, the anterior motor cell inside the spinal cord, which makes you move. So it was moving, it was progressing, it was changing. It went from the spinal cord to the brain stem, to the part of the brain that has to do with memory and learning, the hippocampus, and the part of the brain that has to do with Parkinson's disease, which is substantia nigra and the striatum. So they looked at these areas and they said, well, the highest microglial population in the brain is in the substantia nigra. The second highest is in the hippocampus. These are the two areas most affected. And then they noticed, well, if you look at the olfactory nerves, the microglia and the olfactory nerves and the olfactory bulb, which is closest to the brain, is also activated. And it is also producing this change. And these microglia enter the brain through what's called the entorhinal cortex, which is where the olfactory nerve goes into the brain. And then it spreads to the frontal lobe, temporal lobe, and the parietal lobe, three most affected areas of the brain in Alzheimer's disease. And so they found there was two areas in which there seemed to be a progression coming from the spinal cord or the air you breathe. One was the vagus nerve, and the other was the olfactory nerve and the cranial nerves, especially trigeminal nerve and lower cranial nerve. And so they looked at the microglia in these areas. They were very activated and they were moving. So even though it started there, and then they say, well, where is this coming from? Well, they found that it was coming from the GI tract and the air you breathe. And in the GI tract, if you look at it, for instance, in Parkinson's disease, you see alpha-synuclein in the nerves in the wall of the colon and the intestine. And it seems to be progressing towards the brain. What was not known at the time was, well, it was not appreciated, it was known, was that aluminum is a very inflammatory chemical. Mercury can do that, so can lead, but aluminum was the worst. It seemed to be the thing that was traveling from the GI tract to the brain. You're inhaling a small molecule of aluminum was coming through the nasal tract, and it was in the brain. Well, then they said, well, let's look at the aluminum level. in these diseases. So they looked at it in ALS. The aluminum level in the spine and the nerves that were affected was sky high. They looked in the brain and said, well, we know Alzheimer's starts in the entorhinal cortex and goes to these other areas. Which area of the brain has the highest aluminum? Well, it was the olfactory tract, an olfactory bulb in the entorhinal cortex, where it was entering from the air, from the atmosphere. And so they begin to see, well, there's a process here. Something is moving. This toxic metal is moving two places, one from your GI tract and one from the air. And it seemed to fit everything we see. So you look at it pathophysiologically, it answers a lot of questions. Everybody just kind of scratched their head and didn't know why. This idea that, oh, this is an idiopathic disease, we don't know what causes it. Well, we had gone through that with CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy. And that's these athletes who get concussed, even minor concussion, if they get it 50, 100 times, the brain starts degenerating. Well, they saw the same thing happening. Microglia were activated, excitotoxicity was destroying the brain, and it was occurring in these same areas. And a number of these athletes were developing Parkinson's disease and dementia. When they looked at the brain, well, we're seeing much of the same pathology we saw in a disease we thought was idiopathic, but now we know this isn't idiopathic, it was caused by the trauma. And we know that trauma activates microglia and it produces excitotoxicity. So then the question was, well, what are these chemicals actually doing? And that's when I came up with the idea of immunoexcitotoxicity. And when you look at...
Let me stop you there because what you've... And we can bring everybody, summarize everything up to date. What we saw is an image of the president who has a degenerative disease. And then what you talked about is that you can see this disease in many other different forms. And it's caused by... It can be caused by trauma. You just talked about that many times. The boxers, football players get this. And they talk about Parkinson's disease and dementia. Everybody knows about that from reading the sports page. And the farmers who are using the toxins to the weed killers and so forth to take care of the crops and so forth, they wind up getting the same picture. And then if you get toxins like heavy metals and aluminum, you get the same picture. So it looks like what you said back a few minutes ago is there's got to be some basic common pathway here that's activated. And then you get to the fact that these protective cells, the microglia, which normally are like you get an infection in your arm, you got protective cells everywhere. But what happens in the brain, these cells can become hypersensitized with repeated injuries. Like if I keep getting the pesticide or if I keep getting hit in the head, they're keeping being activated to keep being in a repair state. And so now we've got these activated microglia, which are normally protective. And what you're saying is these are now have been accelerated to the point of almost, it's almost like an autoimmune response where your cells are hyperactive and attacking you. And so now you've assembled a huge amount of evidence that suggests that there is this final common pathway. And that's what you were just, I stopped you here. And it gets to immunoexcitotoxicity, which is a term that you put together a number of years ago. So why don't you go from there? Because I think that one other thing is that you found, how does it get in the body? Well, the toxins we can figure, you can get them by either you get on your hands, you ingest it, you get it in your nasal passages. Your nasal passages are connected right to your brain in the front here. And that's where the olfactory, the smell senses go right there. And actually right next to it is the memory centers, which is in the temporal lobes. So and the front part is the processing part of the brain. So if all that gets affected, you can't remember, you can't learn, you don't know where you are, you can't speak. That's what we just saw. And with repeated injuries, it only gets worse.
Right.
So I think that brings us right up to here, and you want to go further. Go ahead.
Well, what you're seeing, a whole array of chemicals and metals, other things, trauma. Well, what was the common denominator?
Right.
How could they all be connected? They're all activating microglia. They're all inflammatory. And so when you look at misfolded proteins, like you see in alpha-synuclein, well, what causes the misfolded protein? Inflammation, excitotoxicity. And so these other so-called experts have shrugged their shoulders and said, we don't know, it's just a mystery. Well, it's not a mystery. You didn't look at all the factors. You're like a detective. You have to examine. You have to be inquisitive. And you start looking and say, well, what puts this together? For instance, for years, I've worked with autism. And they thought it was a mystery. Why are males more often affected than females? Well, look at the development of the brain. Males develop activated microglia in their brain very early. Females, it's much, much later, and they're not activated. And that goes to priming. And priming says, well, if you take a microglia and you stimulate it, just a moderate stimulant, nothing happens, except inside the microglia, it's producing a lot of enzyme changes to make more inflammatory cytokine and excitotoxin, but it doesn't release them. Then you stimulate it again, and then it becomes an active microglia. Then it's really gearing up making these things. It's about threefold higher than a normal microglia. And then you stimulate it again, it releases them. And so that part of the brain becomes highly inflammatory, and it's secreting a lot of excitotoxins, which are destroying the parts of the brain that has to do with thinking, cognition, and memory and learning. It all makes sense. It all fits together. So then you begin to say, well, it's not that big of a mystery. And so you ask, well, how's that aluminum entering through your nose? Well, geoengineering. They are spraying the skies with nano-sized aluminum, and people breathe it. And it goes straight into the olfactory nerves into the brain. And it's been traced. They did radio tracing to see where it's going. They can see it go through the olfactory nerve and bulb into the brain.
Why are they spraying the atmosphere with aluminum? What's the reason?
It's this crazy idea of global warming. They think it's going to reflect the sunlight back out into space with no consideration of what does nano aluminum breathing and in the water and in the food supply actually doing? Even though we've known since 1911 that aluminum was neurotoxic. We've known a long time. Now, why is nano aluminum more toxic than aluminum you find in nature? Well, it's due to surface area. Nano aluminum has far greater surface area, and it penetrates deeper. It goes inside the cell, inside the DNA. It goes everywhere. Where normal aluminum won't.
Does that interrupt the metabolic processes, aluminum itself? Or how does it act, or do we know?
Well, it's an inflammatory nidus. It's constantly producing inflammation, which keeps their microglia activated.
Okay.
For instance, with a head injury, they found that a man had a head injury. His microglia were activated for 17 years. And they did the study on a group of autistic patients who were 40 years old, and they autopsied their brain. Their microglia were still activated.
So what you're telling us is that there are a whole bunch of toxins in the environment, the pesticides, and that can set them off. But that doesn't mean you have to have the pesticides continuously throughout your life. You could have aluminum, somebody could go be a fighter. You get all of those different things add up and do that. And you said the aluminum's in the air, but it's in the water too. Didn't you write that? It's in the It's in the water we drink. Is that correct?
Yeah, they add aluminum to the water as a clarifying agent, supposed to remove the particulate matter. And so drinking water has added aluminum. Now, in England, there's a researcher who did research on this and found out you could produce dementia by drinking water aluminum. And there's a famous case by Chris Exley, who I know, in which there was a spill of aluminum in the drinking water. It was higher than normal, and people died, and people had instant Alzheimer's disease. And when they looked at their brains, it looked just like Alzheimer's disease.
Well, you mentioned autism disease, so it's obvious a disease that comes over a period of time in your life. Why do the kids or young kids who get this autistic disease, which is a male development of the nervous system, probably with nervous system damage and so forth, you know about this, you've written a book on it. Why do they get it early? Where do they get a dose of some kind of toxin early, which activates all this?
They're vaccinated.
Oh, okay.
And the number one vaccine adjuvant is aluminum hydroxide. And it's different from ingested aluminum. If you ingest aluminum, only a small amount is absorbed. If you inject aluminum, 100% is absorbed. And the amount that these children are getting in the vaccine schedule exceeds the toxic level that should be in an adult.
Oh, my gosh. And they, how many injections do they get through school?
It's up to 65 injections.
So
and then they continue it all the way through college. Yeah. I mean, you go to college where you got to get a new injection. You go to some high schools, you got to get a new injection. And so they're constantly being injected with aluminum that is 100% absorbed, producing these changes in the brain. And what one of the researchers, Dr. Bilbo, found is that these changes in the brain will affect you as an adult. And she quoted four of my papers that I'd written about what happens with this aluminum and what happens with mercury.
So you cited a study in Guam. It was a study that about this. What did that study show?
Well, what they found is they were eating this seed called cycade. And they thought cycade was causing this, they call it ALS, Parkinsonism dementia. It's all in one person. And so Dr. Chris Shaw, he studied intentionally and found out it was aluminum in the soil. The soil was real high. The aluminum in their motor cells was extremely high, and it activated the microglia. I was a moderator at a meeting in Jamaica, and Dr. Shaw was there. And I asked him, I said, Dr. Shaw, how many times have you seen microglial activation in your studies with aluminum? He said, every time. He said, it always produces microglial activation in the spinal cord. Well, it does the same thing in the brain.
So we have a common path. We have a common agent. Now we've got a pathologic study, among others, which shows that it accumulates. We've got all kinds of different ways it can enter the nervous system, in addition to other forms that can activate the microglia and activate this common pathway through your life. So there must be a critical level you reach where it just begins to, the nerve cells begin to degenerate.
Yes, that's what excitotoxicity does. Is they were always, most of the articles in autism and others are written by immunologists. They don't know anything about excitotoxicity. Well, I had a friend of mine who was an immunologist, and he wrote a book about autism, and he studied all the papers that had ever been written. I mean, it was an unbelievable collection. He wrote this book about what he found. In that, he said, Dr. Blaylock has explained the mechanism that explains all this. And so he had looked at all the data. And of course, I'd looked at a good bit of the data myself. And what you're seeing is a whole array of things. And the common denominator is inflammation. They all produce inflammation. They all activate the microglia.
Now,
And this priming is very, very important. Is if you look at the vaccine schedule, they'll give 6 to 9 doses of the adjuvant in a single office visit. No pediatrician would do that to himself. And this is a little child. Then a month later, they do it again. And then a month later, they do it again. And then a month later, they do it again. That's priming. What's happening is the microglia keeps gearing up, gearing up, gearing up. And so, as the studies, the pathological studies showed, well, the microglia were activated for 40 years. And I had literally begged many of these researchers at meetings to do microglial activation scanning, and they wouldn't do it. It was amazing. And finally, someone who I didn't know did microglial scanning of the autistic brain. It looks like the microglial activation you see in Alzheimer's disease. All the microglia in the brain are activated.
So we see, just using the aluminum then as an example of something that's really triggering the system. And obviously, if it comes in a large amount, that becomes a major trigger. If you're a fighter, it's because you're getting these constant blows to the head, which is activating the same system, right? And what happens is, if it's the aluminum, it goes into the astrocytes and which are the structural cells in the nervous system. It goes to the neurons, take it up too.
Well, the neurons do. The number one accumulation of aluminum is in the astrocyte. Well, the astrocyte is the number one storage site for glutamate. And if the aluminum gets high enough, the astrocyte will die and release all of its glutamate.
So now I think we're getting the time to explain immunoexcitotoxicity to the audience. So we've got the microglia primed. We're continually stimulating it. It's releasing a whole bunch of cytokines and all kinds of other things, plus I would assume some glutamate. And now glutamate, which could be a transmitter, now a transmitting agent in the brain. Now it's just the cells are dying. It's being released extensively. What is it doing to the surrounding nervous system?
Well, it's extremely destructive. Glutamate as a neurotransmitter is the number one transmitter in the brain, but almost all of it's inside the cell, the neuron. Outside the neuron, it's extremely toxic. That's the purpose of the astrocyte and the microglia. They have transport protein. Their job is to remove it from the extracellular space and put it inside the microglia and inside the astrocyte. We're safe. And what happens with all these conditions, whether it's trauma, boxing, inflammation, heavy metals, they release it. They cause these microglia not to go to sleep, to stay active, and to release high levels of the excitotoxin and pro-inflammatory cytokine. And what they found is if you combine a concentration of inflammatory cytokine that's too low to cause any destruction, and a concentration of glutamate that's too low to cause destruction, if you mix them together, they're fully destructive.
Okay, so now we have a mechanism that can cause Parkinson's, ALS. Now, I'm going to just go off to a little side path here because I talked about the president and the Lewy body dementia, which is really an accumulation of misfolded proteins in the cell. And that protein, actually, alpha-synuclein, is responsible for the release normally of transmitters and and so forth at the end of the nerve cell, correct? And
Yes, and the problem you have is if you take normal alpha-synuclein and you expose it to inflammation, it misfolds.
right.
Then instead of being helpful, now it's harmful. This is just what happens to beta amyloid. We all have beta amyloid. Protects the brain. But under inflammatory conditions, the beta amyloid changes its chemistry and becomes highly destructive. becomes inflammatory.
Excellent. So now we talked about things that people, you read a little more fully, you talk about beta amyloid, they want to see how much beta amyloid's in the nervous system. Now we got alpha-synuclein and Lewy bodies, and they're misfolded proteins, but they're stimulated by what you're saying is this inflammatory overreaction, immunoexcitotoxicity, and then the glutamate gets in there as a, and it does depolarize the cell membrane, and the cell keeps discharging. There are many ways the cell can die as a result of that, correct?
Yeah, what Dr. Olney, who discovered the process of excitotoxicity, I was a guest at his house and visited his laboratory, and he said, what happens if you expose the cell to too high a dose of glutamate, not extremely high, but higher than normal, within an hour, that cell will die. All the neurons will die. And so you set off this cascade of reactions, which involves a number of inflammatory concepts like PGE2, which is prostaglandin E2. And it activates COX-2. It activates a number of inflammatory processes to cause this change. And so people are blaming beta amyloid and alpha synuclein. Well, they just worsened the process. They were caused by what caused the destruction. They're just part of the destruction.
Now, let me ask you a question. You alluded to it earlier. I just showed you, I went through and read a lot of the things that the average person would pick up the internet and say, Parkinson's disease from the Parkinson's Disease Association or Alzheimer's Association. Nobody talks about this. In fact, as I quoted earlier, nobody knows the cause of it. Well, the answer is what you're saying, there is a cause. We do know what it is. What's the reason for this? I mean, why is there a big gap? Why do these people know this?
Well, what you're starting to see is, since I wrote this article for your journal, is there's a number of major researchers in the area of Parkinsonism that are quoting this article. And they even have paragraphs which discuss immunoexcitotoxicity and have stated that the process seems to be immunoexcitotoxicity. So it is changing. And these experts, these researchers in the area of Parkinson are coming about. Like I said, Chris Shaw in Vancouver, the neuroscientist, he said, I'm exactly on target. He likes it. He thinks it's right. Goes along with all of his research. And what he did, and one of his elaborate experiments, he took some rats and he injected aluminum subcutaneously. And then he examined their spinal cord. And he found the anterior horn cells, particularly in lumbar and cervical area, had all the changes of ALS. And it was excitotoxic.
So the nerve cells in the spinal cord you're talking about are the nerves that make the arms move and the legs move and so forth. Those are activated by neurons, same as in the brain, where it's you're getting all kinds of different connections that are doing things. And what he found is the same thing in the spinal cord as in the brain. Why did it go to the spinal cord?
Well, it comes from the GI tract. There's two ways that it gets in the spinal cord. One is through the nerves that feed the GI system. They go through ganglion and go into the spinal cord. The other is circulating in the blood. It'll enter the spinal cord and brain through that way. So there's two routes of inflammation. There were some researchers, which I quote in my paper, who looked at the progress of these diseases, particularly Alzheimer's and Parkinson's disease. And what he showed is they're going through steps. And he said, if you look at the brain, it's a gradual movement from this entorhinal area, hippocampus, frontal area, parietal lobe. It's on a march. And by the time you're totally demented or dying, it's affected the whole brain. The same thing we see with ALS is it's marching up the spinal cord. Then you start seeing it in the brainstem. Then you start seeing it in other, and then some of these patients will come demented too. And we used to think these were separate diseases. We said, well, there's Parkinson's disease, there's Alzheimer's, and the ALS. Well, in a Guam examination, you saw all three diseases in the same person. And so they started looking at Parkinson's, and they said, well, half of Parkinson's patients become demented. And then they realized there's a cross flow from all these diseases. And we look at the number of people with Parkinson's who develop ALS, a fair number. So they're not pure diseases. They're overlapping. And the only thing that would match this was amyloid cytotoxicity, because it's no respecter of organs.
Yeah. Well, this is a terrific explanation for a very complicated set of diseases and problems that have similar manifestations. Now, if I'm in the audience, I'm saying, what do I do to prevent this? Well, one thing that's obvious is my kids shouldn't be getting these vaccinations. You can talk about that in a minute. What else can I do to stop this from happening? I mean, I almost can't control these things. They're spraying the air, it's everywhere, and I'm getting it into my nervous system. And is there anything you can use to treat it? How do you answer that?
Well, avoidance is a big part of it. So pesticides, herbicides, if you use them in your yard or whatever, you've got to be extremely careful with them. I used to see people, I had their yard sprayed and little kids were out playing in it. They're rolling in it, their toys were in it, and they're putting it in their mouth. It's on their shoes, bringing it in the house. People don't think of these things. But they have found pesticides and herbicides in the stratosphere in the Antarctic and Arctic. There's no plants up there. Nobody's spraying pesticides up there. So it's going all over the world. And we're using tons of this, thousands of tons of this, every day, all over the world. So that avoidance is one thing, when you can, as much as you can. The other thing is there's certain natural compounds that remove aluminum from the brain and the body. For instance, curcumin is known to bind aluminum, and either it will remove it or it makes it non-toxic if it can't remove it. Quercetin will do that somewhat. And trifluralkyl will remove some aluminum, and it'll remove fluoride. So we have a number of compounds now are being discovered that are very powerful at removing these compounds. There's also anti-inflammatory compounds in these plant extracts. So when you start looking at bacopa, valkyline, when you look at apigenin, hesperidin, they're powerful, powerful anti-inflammatories. And so if you combine the two, you're drastically reducing inflammation. You're lowering the level of aluminum. And for instance, like nanocurcumin, it will spread through the brain very easily. It either neutralizes the aluminum or removes it, and it removes it from the rest of your body. I see people all the time, they'll get a glass of water and they squeeze a lemon in it. Or they get tea and they squeeze lemon in it. I said, don't do that. Citric acid will make the aluminum increase its absorption through the GI tract tremendously. Citric acid, malic acid, and glutamate. And what they found, and I talked to some of the researchers about this, is that glutamate will not only increase the amount of aluminum in the brain, it increases the glutamate in the brain. So aluminum might not be absorbed very well unless you're eating a meal that's high in glutamate. Then the brain level will go up, and it goes through several areas of the brain. The glutamate will increase because of that combination of aluminum and glutamate. We also know that fluoride is highly reactive. Aluminum is highly reactive, and I have a research in the Czech Republic I wrote the book with and several articles, and she said you never see fluoride that is not combined to aluminum, that it always, the two of them will combine either in the outside atmosphere or in the water or whatever, but it'll also combine in the body. So we see in all these diseases, high level of aluminum fluoride, the compound. And I wrote an article in your journal about it, the effect on the developing brain as well as neurodegeneration, to show the mechanism of it. And she explained the effects on the enzyme systems.
So really, it's just been a terrific review and revelation of what is the cause of a lot of these degenerative diseases. It's a lot of environmental toxins, as you started out saying, and it all goes to some very basic common inflammatory mechanism, which then becomes an inflammatory mechanism that can be destructive and destroys the neurons and the cells, and it gives you all these kinds of different diseases, travels through the nervous system, and it manifests itself in different ways. Any other thing you can think of before we close? Because I think you left the audience with a greater understanding of this, and I'm sure they're worried about, well, we'll give them a list of the compounds you mentioned so they know. And obviously they can get it from your newsletter, and this isn't a promotion of that, but it's just an analysis of what the science is so that we can alter our behavior to avoid these problems. Anything else you want to add that we didn't cover?
Well, other than removing the aluminum, there's also other compounds that are very powerful at inhibiting microglial activation.
Okay.
Even common vitamins, riboflavin, 5-phosphate, pyridoxal 5-phosphate, thiamine. And recently they found that people even who've had Parkinson's disease for a decade, if they take a high dose thiamine, they can completely reverse. And thiamine deficiency, and what I found years ago, was that everybody thought this destruction at the base of the brain was due to thiamine deficiency directly. And what it showed was actually the damage is excitotoxic. Thiamine inhibits excitotoxicity. And so there's a double thing. And the other thing is don't have your food in aluminum. Don't put aluminum foil on it. Don't cook on aluminum. Don't have an aluminum pan with the aluminum exposed. And don't squeeze a lemon in your drinks. And these things will lower your aluminum, because what happens with food, it'll extract the aluminum, particularly if it's acidic. So if you cook an aluminum pan, or you wrap your leftovers or something in aluminum, it will draw the aluminum out and put it in the food, and then you're consuming. And what happened is, over a lifetime, you're consuming this. That's what I put in the article in your journal, is that you've got a lifetime of oral absorption and a vaccination, particularly things like a flu vaccine every year.
Just a terrific summary and analysis of this problem, Russell. Way ahead of your time, as usual. I think the audience is going to get a lot out of this. And I can't thank you enough for taking the time to inform us about this, tell us about it in a way that's understandable. So
I appreciate it.
That's all right. We'll be back with another installment of your nutritional advice. And thank you very much. Okay.
Well, thank you, Jim. I appreciate the opportunity.
Okay. Okay. This talk that you've heard and discussion focuses on the concept of immunoexcitotoxicity with microglia, which are the immune protectors of the nervous system, the white cells of the nervous system that are activated by multiple toxins, stimuli, and threats during a patient's life. And these activated microglia then, after a period of exhaustive stimulation, release glutamate and cytokines. Many of them, you can see listed there, they produce free radicals, reactive nitrous oxygen species and reactive nitrogen species, which then can enter the mitochondria and cause dysfunction in the metabolic pathways there, leading to the cell death in a concept he entitles immunoexcitotoxicity. In future talks, Dr. Blaylock will go into more detail about the biochemistry of these pathways, which are essential to the understanding of this new concept of the cause of neurodegenerative diseases. These are the key references I mentioned. You should take a screenshot of, because in these papers you will find all the references you need to further pursue this subject. The biochemical basis of neurodegenerative disease, the reference is given at the bottom. Parkinson's disease, again with the references at the bottom. Additive aluminum as a cause of induced immunoexcitotoxicity, which becomes a hallmark of how this disease can occur with this and other stimuli which are become toxic, and the treatment of autism spectrum disorders. So take a screenshot of this information so you can have it for your reference. We hope you've enjoyed this presentation. The material provided in this program is for informational purposes and is not intended for use as a diagnosis or treatment of a health-related problem or as a substitute for consulting a licensed medical professional. Please fill out your evaluation of this video at the end of the program to help us improve the information we're bringing to you in SNI Digital. This recorded session is available free on snidigital.org, snidigital.org, or send your comments and questions or requests for CME credit to Ausman at snidigital.org. There are many ways to learn. Surgical Neurology International is a 2D internet journal like most others. Its editor-in-chief is Nancy Epstein. The web address is sni.global. SNI Digital is a 3D video journal, interactive with discussion of the subject presented so that you have more ability to learn the most you can about it. The web address is snidigital.org. Both of these publications are free on the internet, 24/7, 365. Surgical Neurology International is read in 239 countries and territories and is the third largest neurosurgery journal in readership. SNI Digital, Innovations in Learning, is now read in 100 countries. In 4 months after the publication was initiated, it's the first video journal of neurosurgery. Our goal is to help people throughout the world. The Medical News Network was designed to bring truthful medical and science news to the world. Program is supported by the James I. and Carolyn R. Ausman Educational Foundation. It was copyrighted in 2024. All rights are reserved. Thank you very much for watching.